up, I'm going to record myself, so I'm just going to talk into this phone, okay?
That's me. It was sometime in March in 2017, and I apparently felt compelled to let my 3-year-old know that I was about to start talking to myself.
In my mind, I thought
again, it was becoming a habit.
Other kinds of protests, and in my mind,
at that time, I was really working on my very first long-form audio project. It was a documentary. It was similar to the kind of audio projects I assign students in courses that either focus on soundwriting or include a soundwriting unit. The documentary was about the women's marches that took place the day after 45 was sworn in. At the time, I was really busy with work and at home, and the car trips back and forth to my kids' daycare or to the grocery store became a time when I could dwell and flip over my ideas about this documentary. Initially, I just did it in my head, but then I decided to start recording. And I used the recordings as a way to work through some of the struggles I was having. And then...
So I got accepted to the CS regional conference, and what I proposed was to talk about how my experience composing an audio documentary shaped my pedagogical practices and the teaching of writing with sound. So I thought, what better way than to record snippets as I work on composing this thing.
And so that's what I did. I documented and reflected on my process in writing and in audio recordings, but mostly in audio recordings. And this was intentional. I already knew from my car recordings that talk was rich for invention. I had also recently witnessed talk as a productive invention tool while facilitating student think-alouds for a research project I was doing on digital reading practices. Time and time again, I heard students use talk to draw connections, to make meaning, and to comprehend what they were reading. None of that awesome cognitive work made it to their writing, but that's a different story. So anyway, I observed the value of talk, and Peter Elbow confirmed my observations and research. In Vernacular Eloquence, he argues that speaking is easier than writing, and quote, the kind of language that we blurt, end quote, is incredibly rich for meaning-making. So knowing all that, I wrote or recorded a dozen process notes before or during or after my work sessions. Some process notes were similar in nature to my car recordings, me just riffing on ideas or working through a struggle, while others focused on where I was and what I was doing at that moment in the composing process.
So I got back some feedback from several people. One is a radio producer. I got feedback back from him, and I was completely overwhelmed. I finished reading this, and I thought to myself, wow, I have no idea what I'm doing.
After analyzing both the written and spoken notes, I learned that this is where I was doing my learning. I was learning how to write with unfamiliar rhetorical tools in a foreign genre. Initially, I couldn't even figure out the genre. And in a mode I was uncomfortable in.
I really thought this is exactly what it's all about. I am so uncomfortable writing in this genre. I am so uncomfortable about inserting myself in any way and thinking that I actually can tell a good, interesting story, one that's about real life and not about the classroom or my experience as a graduate student.
I learned what I knew, what I needed to know, and what I didn't know. I also learned an awful lot about myself, both as a thinker and a writer. And then it occurred to me, this is the kind of learning I want my students to do. I'm a rhetoric teacher. I'm not a journalism teacher. I'm working primarily with English majors, high school teachers, and people studying to be high school teachers. I want them to learn about rhetoric and writing in general, sonic rhetoric in particular, sonic composing processes, and perhaps most importantly, how one goes about learning something entirely new and composing in a foreign mode and possibly in a foreign genre. So it made sense to craft a flexible soundwriting assignment that emphasizes the process of writing, and then to create an assessment mechanism that measures learning. So I gave this assignment to graduate students in a 1-week intensive soundwriting class that asked them to compose a project plan, alphabetic or aural process notes, a reflection essay about their writerly choices, and an audio project in any genre for any audience. This assignment is flexible, and it can really be used in any undergraduate or graduate course that has a soundwriting unit or focuses on soundwriting. Analyzing my students' process notes, they taught me a lot, more than I have time to talk about in this reflection, but let me offer some initial observations here. I initially thought the students would be annoyed at the emphasis on process rather than product. After all, it takes a lot of time, a lot of energy and focus and persistence, and the end product is what you have to show for this tremendous amount of effort and work. With that said, though, there was a general sense of relief among the first-time audio composers in my class.
This is something that I've never done before, so it's hard not to be a little intimidated by it and feel pressure to produce something like really good. I mean, obviously, I'm going to do my best and try really hard to make a good product. But that being said, the guidelines for it are focused on the process of it, which I think is kind of reassuring to myself and the other people in the class, just because I think this is the first time a lot of us have done anything like this. English majors, I think we're so used to writing and getting our ideas down on paper as opposed to just speaking them aloud.
We all know that stress has a negative impact on someone's ability to write, so I think the low stakes aspect of this assignment was really key to student engagement and buy-in and investment in the project. Interestingly, my students were divided in choosing to compose audio process notes or alphabetic notes or a combo of the two. In both the audio and alphabetic notes, people talked about their methods, the strategies they used, the challenges they faced, the decisions they made, or what decisions they needed to make. Yet the audio notes, for some reason, they welcomed more a macro conceptual learning than the alphabetic notes. So, for example, several students explored the similarities and differences between alphabetic writing and sound writing in their recordings. And through this talk, they were working toward a more sophisticated understanding of modes, their affordances, their constraints, their composing processes, and how to write in them.
Using Audacity was challenging, but at the same time, really awesome. And I enjoyed that as a writer, so I liked being able to plan out what I was going to do first and then kind of checking off my story plans like a checklist. This is how I want to start, do that sound effect, moving on. This interview, moving on, and then kind of filling in with my narration in between. So it was writing because it's just like building, brainstorming, kind of doing a graphic organizer type deal for sure. It is writing. And you don't think about it until you're actually doing it. It's like, oh, okay, here I am making my first draft, essentially. And then as I go in and edit things, here's my next draft.
Also, these first-time composers tended to elaborate much more on their ideas in the audio process notes than their alphabetic notes. So, for example, in an alphabetic process note, a student might simply write one or two sentences about how they felt frustrated or how they were working through a particular idea. In an audio note, students said much more, and they also allowed themselves to digress and move into talking about something either tangentially related or not at all related. I noticed that some of the most interesting moments, some of that really rich invention work in my students' audio process notes, occurred both in the digressions and also when people took the time to work through and grapple with ideas. It seemed like the longer people talked, the more meaning-making and invention occurred. Take a listen to the very end of this 8-minute audio process note.
And I could call St. Elizabeth's, but they didn't see her till after the fact. And she had cardiac arrest. But, oh, her death certificate could determine basically, if Mark is lying. I don't believe at all that my parents are lying, but it would be like the ultimate proof. So maybe I could try again to get a copy of her death certificate and use that as the ending. But that could be an idea. I'm going to look into the death certificate idea and play around with that and see where it leads me.
After listening to my students' process notes, I realized I did the same thing in my car audio recordings. I would just sit in the car and blab on and on. I would stumble and fumble, and then I'd hit on something. Something that was good or insightful, or something that was awful and horrible. But whatever it was, I couldn't get there in any other way. This free speaking, if you will, this freedom to use language without constraints and limitations, it is no doubt valuable for student learning and no doubt valuable for teaching students how to write effectively in any mode, but especially in the aural mode. So this is all to say that a sound writing assignment that focuses on process and the learning and the doing of sound writing is incredibly valuable for students, especially first-time audio composers.
I'm recording myself. So when I set out to write this story...
I'm Tanya Rodrigue, an associate professor in English at Salem State University in Massachusetts. A big shout-out to the students in my Composing with Sound graduate class back in the summer of 2017. And a big thank you to Blue Dot Sessions for the music used in this reflection.